Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Break on through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me, as always, is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, and if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure, if you get a chance, to go to Amazon and check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase them, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And tonight we are going to have poetry from 2 different contests that were ran by Captain B2, otherwise known as Bobby to us. And the carryovers will be from the neo-surrealistic illustrations of Victor Nagai. And then the second batch of rights that we'll get into were inspired by a contest that Bobby ran called All That Is Gold Is Not Gold. And it had quotes and artwork that focused on the theme of gold without being gold. So I'm definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry, hanging out with Rex, and maybe another cool poet or two. You just never know what the night will bring. And hello, Rex. What's up?
Not much. What's cooking?
Hey, good looking. What you got a cooking? Anytime I hear cooking mentioned, I just want to break out into that song. And, but yeah, like As I said, I think it looks like we have a great lineup of poetry tonight, you know, and a lot to just, you know, I'm looking forward to the conversation sparked and all that and thoughts sparked. Or who knows, maybe my brain will go dead in the middle of the show or in the middle of a poem. You know, you just never know. All right. So, what do you got for us first?
What if the heavens explode by S. Sharp? She works the barren desert sands as the water turns to clouds and clouds turn to sleeping gods. Dreaming of lost loves and worlds they were banished from or dispatched to. The planet's orbit do in fact revolve around her just as she felt as a teenager, and she swims in the dry pleasure of it, sinking to the bottom of a barrel of love that the gods shoot fish in. And the approaching planets explode excitedly in approval. It will rain sand again soon. There is so much more raking to be done. End poem.
There, Rex. Yeah, I thought this was definitely a stellar write. Ended up giving it an HM, which, you know, there were so many writes in this contest. Well, there were 10 writes in this contest, and pretty much almost all 10, like all 10 of them were worthy of the top three. You know, to me, this really spoke on how higher powers that be, and not just, you know, I'm not just talking about, you know, the potential of God powers, but those who sit up in seats of higher power play with the fate and lives of humanity. I really thought this had powerful imagery and metaphors all the way through, but, you know, to me, I was especially drawn to the second stanza. The planet's orbit do, in fact, revolve around her just as she felt as a teenager, and she swims the dry pleasure of it. You know, the idea that somebody very self-centered, very self-focused on feeling like the whole world revolves around them. Thinking of, and I like how he brings in the whole, like a saying of shooting fish in a barrel, but he switches it up, sinking to the bottom of a barrel of love that the gods shoot fish in, and the approaching planets explode excitedly in approval. It's intriguing to me that the idea, because the idea of shooting fish in a barrel is that it's something made too easy. There's no reward for it. And so I feel like there's this whole idea of going past what is too easy to do and, you know, going in almost an adventure of love, an adventure of life. You know, just absolutely just to me an intriguing and thought-provoking write in its ideas of control and, you know, ease of how we approach life. So just a wonderful write, very well done. And Rex, you read that beautifully. Your thoughts?
I'm going to go with something odd. She's a greenskeeper. She's one of those that come along and return the sand traps back to normal. Kind of hits on that notation where it said, it will rain sand again soon. There is so much more raking to be done. It's on that notion of somebody who's raking the sand traps so to the their pristine elegance for the next crew to come through or the next round of golfers to come through. And the thought of the planets do in fact revolve around it. Just she felt there's that sort of the hole on the green the gods shoot fish in, meaning the golfers themselves, and then the applause. Approval of sinking the putt, so to speak.
I like that thought. I like that thought. That, yeah, I could definitely see that in the imagery. I like, you know, it's it's always great when you listen to someone else's point of view of a poem, and you see something else. And you know, to me that makes like a great, yeah, as you were saying, I thought, well, that makes for a really great metaphor in the idea of cleaning up this earth, you know, cleaning up this world for the next generation to do their playthrough. Very cool lyrics. And what do you got for us next?
Unmasked by Sandy G.
All right. Unmasked by Sandy G. And it goes like this. The human mask is scaled aside, exposing the ebon truth inside. Lust uncontrolled is justified. Consternation cloaked in ebon, ding by, tolling somnolence and rattling heavy chains. Inhaling sweet perfumes, expelling fetid breaths of disquietude and dismay and loss of all resolve and poem. And what did you think of that right there, Rex?
Well, the picture has me thinking of the Middle Ages when the plague was running through, that kind of a mask. And the thought of the mask in this offered up is the that kind of eyes wide shut motif of letting it all hang out, because no one really knows who you are in the moment. And on either side, it's that notice of being able to dip oneself into without revealing yourself to the point where it impedes that which you do normally.
I like that. I like that. The idea of, you know, that two different sides of oneself, but, you know, not allowing the one side to impede the other. I find it just a really stunning and intriguing picture where you have, you know, what appears to be the backside of, of a beautiful woman, and staring at, and you're right, it does look like one of those, like, doctor masks from, like, the Middle Ages. You know, it also has a very, almost like a, like, well, to me, like, very shadowy demon-type look. It's, you know, the idea of confronting one's own personal demons. And here, the personal demons seem to be giving in to the whatever, I feel like it's about addiction. It's about, you know, that where it says lust uncontrolled is justified. So it almost makes things sensual or sexual addiction, but I think it applies to the whole idea of any heavy chains that we carry and that we accept. And inhaling sweet perfumes, expelling fetid breath of disquietude and dismay and loss of all resolve. I thought this was a powerful brevity, especially in that ending with the loss of resolve and the giving in to whatever it is that called you forth. You know, inhaling sweet perfumes, expelling fetid breaths. That feels to me like the idea of smoking. Just, like I said, wonderful brevity and very well done. And what do you got for us next?
Ready, Eddie by Thomas B. She wore red. He did not know what lay ahead. The fragility of the veil-like cape, no more than a cloud about her shoulders, keep many a peering eye from seeing what adventures were lurking. He was sure he was bold. She loved to see the way flames could caress without burning, the wonders a sense of destruction could bring to the heart of desire. In the quiet, where dawn began to flirt, she stirred rivers to calm the night's efforts, to let the tides of the moon create a swoon. So the lover would never know their doom. until the heart had bridged to surrender. Prints on the silver path sparkled like stars, flashed like sparks, promised, if you can follow the proper path, every breath will feel like joy's grass. There were histories of civilizations crumbling in the sway of her hips, God mumbling before being caught by the sight of the switch, the metronome that said, seize the time or burn in regret, take all you can get. He lit a cigarette, thinking his moves were what counted, and she would be bespelled. There is more than one stairway to hell. Many flourish because so many love to fall down each step, with hopes there will be a reward. And yet, so often hope's only glory is the sound they make as they come crashing down. And Paul.
And this was on our topic board?
No, I just picked it out of the air.
Well, I'm just wondering how you got a poem from a Twisted Tuesdays for a break on through.
You put it there.
Oops. Okay, my bad. Shoot. I'm sorry. I don't even know why that would have been there. Well. Okay, well, we'll just hope that the rest of them are right. And I don't even know why that one is there. That is a weird thing. Okay, my apologies. I was just thrown off. But that was a wonderful read there, Rex. And just, a strong poem all the way through. I like how this was told. Okay, never mind. I must have been accidentally clicked on another poem. Okay, no, it's okay. Jeez. Okay, sorry about that. All right, but I liked the way that this was a story, and there was almost a, that noir style feel to it that I very much enjoyed. And she loved to see the way flames could caress without burning, the wonders a sense of destruction could bring to the heart of desire. You know, there truly is an idea to me of a woman who loves them and leaves them, who plays games with the mind and to the heart. He lit a cigarette thinking his moves were what counted and she would be spelled. There's more than one stairway to hell. I like that. I like that play on the whole idea of the song Stairway to Heaven, but instead, the whole idea that, the path, of getting to hell is broad and wide. And what else here? I mean, really good lines. Her footprints on the silver path sparkle like stars, flash like sparks. Promised, if you can follow a proper path, every breath will feel like joy's gasp. There were her histories of civilizations crumbling in the sway of her hips. That is, those are the kind of lines that would make an amazing prompt for a contest. And what I like is that there's this observation, these observations made of this woman, not just who she was physically, but who she is emotionally and psychologically, and how she brings the world crashing around her. But it also made me think, this is silly, but there's this fake commercial that Saturday Night Live does for this perfume called Red Flag. Like instead of Red Door from Christian Dior, it's Red Flag. She's funny, but not ha-ha funny, like crazy funny. Red Flag. It makes me think of those red flags that are put up, but you just ignore them because, the fire burning is just a little too tempting. So excellent write. Very well done. And
might be that red flag of waving in front of a bull before you get gored.
A good point there, Rex. Exactly. Yeah. It's the whole idea, like you said, getting gored by the bowl. And what else did you think of this poem?
I got to go with Dreams and Promises Therein, because of the view that one is remarking on. And it does come with that singular aspect of almost a Philip Marlowe effect, She Wore Red. And that second stanza stands nicely just for the way the cape is engulfed, a whole city engulfed in flames. You get that idea of a Cleopatra or a Helen of Troy, a face that could launch 1,000 ships or burn a country to the ground. This kind of hints that that thought that she's a female Nero watching as Rome burns, except the burning is usually going to be the one who actually pick her up, because apparently she's got a whole lot of baggage with her, and he's making note of that. And what else? He thinks he's up to the task, and he got that title of Ready Eddie, assuming, but the assumption is always the thing that gets you, because when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me, and you go down in flames.
Exactly. I really liked that you brought up the idea of her being like a female Nero, like a, you know, somebody who has power over a city and watches its destruction. I thought that was a really great observation there. And what do you got for us next?
We've got Swarming by Phoenix Aradia.
All right. Swarming by Phoenix Aradia. And it goes like this. It's a tense, tensuous time, the threads of civility growing frayed and thin. We are all vaguely aware of our imminent demise, the trouble we're in. Ignoring the obvious, truth leaked but seldom heard, the voices of the trampled, muffled, like a softly chirping baby bird. Brow beating brow, resentments and frustration, snapping off twigs, each other's castigation. Desperate and panic, tomorrow keeps looming, our insecurities, our intentions, looming. Manipulations, facts, you are wrong, I'm right. If you don't wholly submit, I'm poised to put up a fight. Like wolves howling at a faraway moon, you can see our own impending doom. Futility is setting in as we desire to see a meaningful change. We miss the point every time. Our tangent is too far downrange. Our target is too far downrange. When really we feel the walls closing in, our options becoming limited, we see no paint in proposing to our futures on a bruised and wobbly knee. So we look elsewhere and up. Will salvation come from the sky? We must not clip our wings if we ever want to try to fly. End poem. That was just a really beautiful and thoughtful poem. And what are your thoughts on this, Rex?
A careful and current notation of things that are working across the world from the few who would rather have the rest bend a knee and do as they're told. And at the end of the thought to the end line, it's on that notion. There's a offering up that thought to spiritual aspects, but if you're coming back to it, then you've forgotten what was supposed to be there in forefront in first place. And the thought of ever trying to fly is remembering the fact that, the only one you should be offering up a note of proper thought to is the Creator, as opposed to those who create different things, but are not of that realm itself.
I like that, and I like the relevance of that. You know, and to me, the end stanza spoke really well of that, but it also spoke really well to me also on the idea of our own inner powers, our own empowerment. We must not clip our wings if we ever want to try to fly. And so to me that really speaks on the idea of not only looking towards the Creator, but looking at yourself and, you know, learning to think for yourself. I felt like this is definitely relevant to current times, desperate and panicked. You know, tomorrow keeps looming, our insecurities, our intentions dooming. You know, there's people who just, they play on people's insecurities. They play on people's panics. I really also like that second stanza, ignoring the obvious, truth weak but seldom heard, the voice of the trampled muffled like a softly chirping baby bird. You know, and you think of a baby bird and you think of how it's like constantly hungry and constantly has its mouth open for food. And to me, here are people who constantly are looking for answers, are looking for the information. And not only is it being hidden from them, but because they ask, their voices are muffled. You know, I thought this had just some brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through and spoke really powerfully on the idea of seeking answers and not letting anyone quiet your voice. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next?
The Clock, Part 1, Mayhem, Creation and Mayhem. The day dawned, time has begun, Big Bang's done, the clock chimed 1. Sky's blueprints, brand new, light made its debut, the clock swayed 2. The powers that be, chaos, dust, debris, the clock chimed 3. Gave birth to the core, water lapped the shore, the clock swayed 4. Then man will arrive, the fight to survive, the clock chimed 5. Throw man in the mix, monkey on a stick, the clock swayed 6. The planet will redden, pain won't deaden, time chimed 7. Mankind's on a date, to seal its own fate, the clock swayed 8. Crepuscular time, death's unkind, it defined, the clock chimed 9. Bedlam, torn land, the day died at the end, the clock swayed 10. There it is, there it was, and there it goes. Out forever so, time's long-lasting flows. We march and talk at the notes of tick-tock. Cast not, fail not, the respite of the clock. None but the fool mocks upon the last knocks. Tick-tock, tick-tock, will you stop? Will you not? Carpe diem. End poem.
Great read, Rex. I really like the rhyme and flow to this and how it almost had like a nursery rhyme type feel, but like the nursery rhymes that have that edge of darkness. I thought ending with the phrase carpe diem seize the day was really great, especially after the bright kept bringing you through the different times on the clock and the different events. Time has always fascinated and intrigued me because of the fact that it's really a man-made invention. And to me, this really speaks on how we're so busy watching the clock and what's going to be next, you know, instead of, you know, living in that moment, seizing that moment. It's all about worrying about the next tick, you know, rather than where we are in the present. At least that's how I see it or hear it. Excellent write. Really liked the repetitiveness. Drew you in and there was something like very nursery rhyme about it, but not like it was. I don't want to say that it was something that only children should read, but I feel like it had that kind of moral lesson that oftentimes is hidden within like Mother Goose nursery rhymes or Dr. Seuss poetry writing. Just a really great write and very well done. And Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
It's that middle piece that hits the right note. Throw a man in the mix, monkey on a stick. The clock swayed six, monkey on a stick. That hits both realms, the before and after, man and monkey. Might be man, but at the moment, this one's a monkey on the stick because there's agitation, uneasiness, maybe fear. And that precludes the fact that you hit on the thought of we march and talk and notes of TikTok, case not, cast not, fail not, the spice of the clock, the edge of walking from being born to die. That's the notation in it. And the carpe diem hits that angle of why worry about that which you already know you're going to do anyway. You got to seize the day as it comes. Otherwise, you don't live in the day because you're busy counting off the hours until you die.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed out that middle stanza with the monkey on the stick, because I did feel like that was a particularly a powerful stanza and humorous, too. Oh, geez, I'm knocking stuff over. Okay, I got to stop that. All right, but or at least stop it until I'm on mute. But, yeah, I thought that was particularly humorous to me. For, you know, I like it kind of a nice, dark, twisted humor. And so, yeah, great comment there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
That would be where is it? TikTok by Jason John Morgan.
TikTok by Jason John Morgan. That goes like this. Watch yourself become a skeleton on a skeleton watch. Life is short is a redundant statement. Life is literally the longest thing you can do. From the cradle to the grave, from the womb to the tomb, from breath to death, from creation to cremation. Time will carry on long after you become carrion. End poem. Now that one had some really just nice wordplay. You know, great brevity there. And what are your thoughts, Rex?
Well, dry and witty based on the last couple of lines. Womb to tomb, breath to death, creation to cremation. Like that's time will carry on long after you become carrion. I definitely like that because we all end up feeding something one way or another. And that's it on that notation too of you know where you're going while you're bothering with the clock.
Very true there. Very true. Yeah, like I said, that you know where you're going while you're bothering. I like how immediately, like, he opens up with the idea that, you know, the second line, that life is short is a redundant statement. Life is literally the longest thing you can do. And to me, I feel like there's a couple different ways I could touch on that. That, to me, could touch on the idea if, you know, if somebody doesn't believe in the afterlife and, they, you know, like, once life is over, that's it. So, you know, life is going to be the longest thing you can do. Or it may touch on the idea of believing in an afterlife where within, you know, the idea that within heaven there isn't a passing. You don't feel, there's not the same way that time is not measured, you know, it's not kept track of, you know. And so, therefore, because we keep such track of every moment of our life, it is the longest thing we will ever do. I also thought there was some great rhyme in here, womb to tomb, cremation, creation to cremation. I also really thought that end line, just clever wordplay with time will carry on long after you become carrion. You know, and to me, that just really speaks strongly on the idea, you know, that eventually we just have to let go Powerful right here and very well done. And what do you got for us next? What's next?
Crazy College Kid by Rick. We decided to combine two crazes. So we all swallowed a goldfish, and all 25 of us crammed ourselves sardines into a phone booth. We had just squeezed in there like sweating puzzles. I'd like to say we got out of there in New York minutes, but the fact is we needed the jaws of life to escape, and it wouldn't be invented until 1961. So, you know, I think we set the record for most kids in a dorm shower. End poem.
Oh, my gosh. This is great. Great read there, Rex. This cracked me up. First of all, you know, it takes you back to those crazy college days, which I didn't go through, but, you know, you hear stories. And, you know, I don't know if this is a made-up story or if this is something him and his buddies actually tried to do. Oh, my gosh. You know, as soon as it starts with swallowed a goldfish, then all 25 of us crammed ourselves like sardines into a phone booth. You're going, yep, something is going to happen here. I really liked, we needed the jaws of life to escape, and it wouldn't be invented until 1961. So, you know, and then the pause. Like, I really feel like good humor knows to give that bit of a pause before the punchline ending. I think we set the record for most kids in a dorm shower. This one, definitely smile-inducing and laugh-inducing. Very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the goldfish swallowing has been around for quite a while, and it was nice having that picture up there with the crazy college kids. You knew it was going somewhere. And again, the thought with the 25 kids into a phone booth. Yeah, I've seen the one where they've stuffed 25 kids into a Volkswagen. There's a nice twisted little thing as well. But the middle of that, the punchline being, I think I'm going to puke. Then rolling off a different thought with the act of needing the jaws of life to get out, which they hadn't, clearly hasn't been invented yet. And there's nobody on the outside to actually help do the extrication. So that shower being, oh, yeah, most kids in a dorm shower, yeah. Because once Jimmy starts puking, everybody else is going to be puking in kind, and that's going to be one foul phone booth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I was looking, and it seems like there's various stories and theories of when and where the goldfish swallowing started. As early as the 1920s. So, yeah, crazy stuff. And nowadays you can't even find a phone booth anyways. So, you know, kids have to do other crazy things like eat Tide Pods.
That's not very intelligent.
No, it is not. All right, what do you got for us next?
Etched on stone by Jasker Man.
Oh, is it my turn to read?
Yeah.
Okie dokie, Smokey. That's what I thought. All right. Etched on Stone by Jasker Ann. And it goes like this. In the silence of the temple, Acadia's voice alone, ushering from plowing of the rocks, penetrates the mysterious mist. The world hypnotized with dreamy mint gaze, spewing green, glinting brown, rubble, one shovel, one pail, and one corner of the sandbox pivoting dust into a majestic castle, where a scrunchy rustling in the shade of the morning sun, leaves remain frozen, intricate snowflakes gather in Siberian clusters, beneath a leaden sky feel the rabbit's warm feet. Birds at top chirping a Welsh song. Oh my God, it is unbearable to feel the gloom of this dark, joyless hour. I look up to the stars in the moonlit night, trying to quell my tears inside, when peck a brown-colored must stains wrap a soul that the world called chatterer. To me breathed a Beethoven melody, visiting graves, the lotus closes, for the sun no longer shines, the flower wonders, and poem. Well, that one was just absolutely, absolutely stunning. Just beautiful use of imagery. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the sort of etched on stone is building, obviously. And the angle in the silence of the temple, a cicada's voice alone, ushering from plowing of the rocks, penetrates the mysterious wind. Yes. It's on that note of life itself. The world hypnotized with dreamy mint gaze, spewing green, glinting brown rubble. One shovel, one pail, in one corner of the sandbox, tributing dust into a majestic castle. Again, the sort of life building. Then a turn of thought where you hit a new locale that goes from almost, tropical to a frozen remain, or even does get the frozen remain with the sort of Siberia. So we're going from the one angle of warmth into the cold, so kind of hints the note of a death. And the spirituality that comes with it, visiting graves, sun no longer shines, the flower wonders. Lotus has often been associated with life itself and how it births, so to speak. But I like the thought with the chatterer to me breathed a Beethoven melody. There's that notation of enjoying the moment itself, whether it's the call or whether it's just the living in the moment as opposed to worrying about that which comes, which would be death eventually.
I like those thoughts there, Rex, especially as you touched on the ideas of life and death. And, you know, even the title, Etched on Stone, you know, gives the idea like of a headstone. Is it pronounced cicada? I'm not sure about, is that a cicada?
No, it's a run-on, a cicada.
A cicada, okay. But I like that whole idea of the voice alone, you know, that there is no other voices but just that one that stands alone. And I like how he brings in nature imagery and different cultures. Like even where he says birds at top chirping a Welsh song, you know, because you think of that area as being, the weather being very gray and dismal, and rainy oftentimes. And so there's this idea to me of people, a person who continues to sing a happy song, even as life has its gray mist, its, you know, fog, and it is difficult at times to get through. I really liked the explanation of, oh my God, it is unbearable to feel the gloom of this dark, joyless hour. And to me, that really speaks strongly on that idea of that being on the edge of death, being at that, you know, where you know that there is no longer life, but it, you know, it's gone from there. But even, yeah, and in the end, there's a kind of a comfort to me, you know, that the idea of that soul wrapped a soul that the world called chatter, to breathed a Beethoven melody. I feel like there's a nod to a person that, you know, that they meant something to them, that, you know, that their voice, their singing, their joy for life, you know, was an example of who they want to be. I thought this was beautifully written and very well done. And what do you got for us next?
Outside the Bowl by Diane D. And there's a SoundCloud one.
All right. So, find that. All right, here we go.
Outside the Bowl by Diane D. When you are born in a fishbowl, then you act like a fish in a bowl. You kind of just have one purpose. Swim in circles till you get old. In my young bowl were 8 goldfish, my parents and siblings of 5. With everyone going in circles, you had to be smart to survive. But life in the bowl was hard. All I could do was swim to the west and turn myself over to stepdad, a father who thought he knew best. The bowl, it came with its struggles of religion, addiction, and abuse. I wasn't allowed to say no to him, and to tell what he did was no use. I swam in that bowl for 18 years. They kept telling me that I was gold. They also told me what I could think and to put all other ideas on hold. They said that gold was gold and you're to swim with only the same. Don't ever be seen with a guppy. Don't cause the bowl any shame. Eating crap and dropping flakes was my life in the bowl every day. But I wondered how life would be if I were to swim the other way. So with my bubble eyes bulging and my belly full from a feast, I picked up my scaly fin suitcase and I turned and I swam to the east. Amazing great big world out there of guppies and minnows of rust. Blue angel fish and cute tiger barbs. I would look at that glass and lust. So I rented myself an aquarium and set out to save for a lake. Had the world by the tail all day, but at night my heart would ache. So I needed to find me a goldfish, that special young goldfish to love, that one that would share in my life, that one that would fit like a glove. But I soon found myself in distress. No goldfish found light in my eyes, but I couldn't get it out of my head to love any other fish isn't wise. And that to love outside the gold just wasn't the right thing to do. You just have to love your own kind. Doesn't matter what love is to you. My heart and my head were at odds. There was something bleeding inside. That I was free to follow my heart. And for love, I wouldn't be denied. So came a night I went to the pub. And here was me, a young yuppie. I looked to the west, bid them adieu, and fell in love with a cute guppy. And the moral of this piece is simple. It's that you have a right to your voice. You are allowed to be who you are. Don't let anyone dictate your choice. End poem.
Great reading right there, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're not able to call into the shows, then making a recording is the next best thing. Because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Rex, what did you think of this poem?
An Aesopian fable. A nice little moral twist to it, because it kind of most of it kind of hits on that note of cultish behavior, where you're taught strict guidelines and you can't walk outside that little tidbit of arena the hits on there, all those the goldfish, you've got guppies. Like I thought, I packed up my skating in the suitcase. Nice touch. A little twist at oneself. And realizing out there, past the little world that she was raised in, you have guppies, minnows, blue angelfish, tiger barbs. It's an ocean of wealth, an aquarium of unusual things to be seen and get to know. And the back end of this is the moral of living under the dictates of a singularity without offering up the thought to letting your own mind decide how your life decides to flow, as opposed to what you've been taught.
Absolutely. And yeah, you're right. There eventually comes that time where, you know, you have to think for yourself and decide your life and your choices, and not necessarily based on what you were taught. This has just been a great night for Diane as far as poetry goes. You know, if you get a chance, she wrote this poem for Dexter and Fabiana's show, Selfie, I believe it was called. And this one, too, just really great, powerful impact emotionally. This one had really nice rhyme and flow. And for here, I like how she brings us into to her youth, you know, to this idea of how her family made her decisions for the first 18 years of her life. And that, you know, there was this idea of, hey, you know, there are certain people that you don't hang out with and certain people that you do hang out with. And then really just a really great ending in the idea of finding that self-empowerment, that own voice, you know, and changing out that goldfish bowl for something bigger, something with a better view. You know, I like how there's that within, like, I look to the west, bid them all adieu. You know, that idea of striking out into an adventure, you know, of making your own choices. So just a great write all the way through and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Sammy or the Golden Current. Bye. Coming into myself. That was yours.
All right. Sammy or the Golden Current by Coming Into Myself. And it goes like this. Sammy, our pet goldfish, swimming forever in our memories on a current of young love. You won him for me at the state fair that first summer after we were married. His soft, water-colored memorial sign recently swam to the top of a box of memories, still tugging gently at our heartstrings after nearly four decades. The goldfish, just a metaphor? Memories swim around us, though our hearts and minds share the current of a koi pond between them. Perhaps we be mer people half submerged in the golden koi flow, the vital fluid of our existence. Only when the ecology of the pond is disturbed do we realize fully how desperately we are left gasping, how memory has dimmed, and we swim so hard to keep up with the remaining golden koi lights, realizing too late how central memory has been to our existence. We may realize that not all koi are golden. Some are mostly white, deceptively so, in the fullest microbiome of the pond. A few white koi will not dim the golden current, rather seemingly to intensify it by reflecting the gold like memories, shining brighter, not necessarily truer than the rest. After all, that glitters is not gold. End poem. Well, I really liked that one. That had some wonderful imagery and metaphors, and I don't think I've ever seen Coming Into Myself, any of her writes in our shows, so I'm really happy to be reading someone new, and I hope we get to see and read more of her work. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, since it does hit on memory as the whole tone, as well as the current itself, and that one stanza, second from the bottom, hits on loss. There is a kind of a notation in it of as with progression of age comes its nuances. The thought with the white koi, I think the koi and the golden flow are the brain activity and how it works, and those little white ones that kind of drop in there as deceptively so are kind of little neutral angles where the brain isn't fully cognizant in the moment, might be due to Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something else which is interfering. Yet there is a note to cherishing those golden flows, and even when the you get that little bleep of white, which kind of offers up the intensity of how you should take those golden moments when they do come, because they can get to that point where it becomes rare, because you hit them that only when the ecology of the pond is disturbed. We realize fully how desperate we are, left gasping. Our memory has dimmed, and we swim so hard to keep up with the remaining golden koi lights. I think that's a nice notation to not just the brain diminishing, maybe the body itself and the person. And you got to enjoy those moments where the cognizance is full, lest you don't have that memory to fall back on later on, and you're left with, like it says, all that glitters is not gold. And some of those moments that do glitter are not gold, and you don't want the harshest reality remembering. You want the best note to draw from.
Absolutely. I like how you talked about how oftentimes memories fade, and you know, that the idea that, you know, you just want to hold on to those good memories. For me, that the beginning really spoke on the idea of how those memories that you don't think in the moment are going to be that important, like, you know, going to the state fair and you know, winning a goldfish, you know, you don't think necessarily that'll be something that'll stick with you. But sometimes it's those little things that become the most important. I really liked the way that she mixed science and art, like mentioning ecology and of the pond being disturbed, but and yet had some really and had beautiful language, which, you know, the way she mixed science and art made me ask myself the question, what is she a teacher, or did she used to be a teacher? And I looked over at a page, and sure enough, yep, she did used to be a teacher. And I think that shows in her writing. It's stunning in the way she does that. And I like how she reminds us that the kois aren't all gold. Sometimes they're white. Sometimes the memories are white. In the idea that they're not flashy. They're not grand. But it's those simple moments that reflect, you know, a bigger feeling, like that feeling of love and that feeling of joy that comes to you as you look back. And interestingly, I like that you brought up the idea of memories being lost, you know, especially because, you know, that makes me think of Alzheimer's and you know, well, I can't remember the other word for it, but I mean, it's two different things, dementia. And I was reading the other day that it was, you know, this person was asking about, you know, what they should do, you know, when their father's like going back in memory to, like, you know, his youth. And they were advised, you know, just be there with them, because this is a way to communicate with them. This is a way, you know, to step into their world and possibly learn more about them. And I also, well, and I like in this poem that she asks, she says, still tugging gently at our heartstrings after nearly four decades? Then ask the question, the goldfish just a metaphor? And the question I think is important because the goldfish is a metaphor, but it's not just a metaphor. It's their moment that meant something important to them, to her. So beautifully written and very well done. And
that's also the long-term memory, four decades. That's what doesn't get erased. It's always the short-term memory that is affected the hardest. And long-term memory, it goes into when you've gone into full depreciation of the mind itself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you're right. Yeah. I remember there was, like, when I used to work at the nursing home, there was quite a few people who you knew that they, like, we had some that would have to be like, well, I don't know why I'm here. I need to go home. I have a house to take care of. And you know, sadly, they didn't. So, yeah, you're definitely right there, Rex. The long-term memory, the short-term memory is the one that is affected the most. So great observation there. And what do you got for us next?
Because it glitches doesn't make it gold. Martha Gessel, got to stay on quiet.
All right. Find that, and here we go.
Because it glitters, it doesn't make it gold. By Martha Gessel. When I met you, I thought you were gold. But you were just a shiny thing I couldn't hold. I'll admit, you fooled me for a time. And I let you mess with my mind. Now I see past your shine to what's underneath. And I know that you are not what I need. I like the way you made me feel. But now I know nothing about you is real. Now I know all that glitters is not gold. No, it's just a shiny thing to hold. I know you only mess with my head. I could never believe a single thing you said. I thought you were perfect, it's true. Until I saw the real you come shining through. So now I won't be fooled by you anymore. And I won't love you like I did before. Now I know all that glitters is not gold. No, it's just a shiny thing to hold. I know you only messed with my head. I could never believe a single thing you said. Now you can save your lies for someone new. I won't be waiting around for a call from you. I know it was just an imitation you sold. But I know if I keep looking, I'll find real gold.
Great read and write there, Martha. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is truly appreciated. And, you know, I really like the way Martha has excellent rhyme and meter with her songwriting. She's so kind of, like, honest and heartfelt when it comes to writing about love. And here, I like how she writes about the idea of someone who looked good at the time, but you just realized afterward. It really much, very much reminds me of when you deal with somebody who is what's the word for it? Dang, I'm blanking out here. You know, somebody who's, like, really into themselves, somebody who...
Narcissist.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Narcissist who's very charming at the time and then can easily turn on you when you don't suit their needs anymore. I really liked the chorus. I know you only messed with my head. I could never believe a single thing you said. And I also like the line, I thought you were perfect. It's true until I saw the real you come shining through. And that's the thing with people who manipulate, who play games, is eventually their true self comes through. So I really thought this was a great write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Two things. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? They're inside of you. And the second is an understanding of being warned, yet didn't pay the warning any kind. So I had to find out for yourself.
Absolutely. You know, and oh my gosh, it's been a while since I've heard that song. So thank you for that. But you're right. A lot of times, especially when it comes to love and relationships, I've been in both circumstances where I've gotten warnings and I've given warnings, you know, and you don't listen to them. So great comment there, Rex. And what do you got for us next?
Golden Remnants, Victoria Frost and Sam Cloud.
All right, here we go.
Golden Remnants by Victoria Frost. I have watched you wither, attempting to polish the shine back into your appearance, massage the bloat from your belly, but dropsy is a bitch. Each day a caress that removes one more scale left to glitter on my thumb. A beautiful reminder that sands are falling faster than I can keep up. The white flesh of your sides exposed, pure, beautiful, and sickening. Contrasting the beauty of all that you were, lesions spreading across perfection, and no amount of glitter may replace what my tears have washed away. My deft fingers stumbling in panic to save a sinking fish. Scraping off the glittering gold of your magnificence, your eyes casting pleading glances to let you swim free, uncaring of what demise may come. Chasing a slivered hope of survival rather than the crushing weight of my despair, the suffocation of my fearful grasp. I do not want to sit helpless at your pond, casting flakes of food upon the surface, distorting your image to my ever-watchful eye, mournfully, meticulously preparing you baths, an Epsom salt soak that burns your lungs, dehydrates your golden scales, leaving glitter in your wake, vigilantly collected and washed with my tears. Red, puffy eyes rubbed raw, pushing back the fatigue, attempting to avoid succumbing to the drowning need for sleep.
Okay,
where my
what
nightmares
happened?
Drag me into the depths and snatch my hope one full scale at a time. But I am human.
Bam, where you at?
I do not have cool waters to buoy my lids from the weight of exhaustion. Hydrate my tearless
Bam.
Eyes. And so I think...
You? Hang up
into
the phone,
the land of nightmares,
get hung up on, get
and wake in a world of destruction where your flowing tails lay still, cloudy blue eyes staring blankly back, and your glitter no longer gleams gold.
All right, is that the end?
Great, Victoria. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Now, this was a definitely something of a different sort to the goldfish angle, golden remnants. I watched you wither. That's a hell of an opening line. And the thoughts going on from there about the withering of the flesh under one's eyes and the pain that brings with it. Even so, the idea that there is still a touch of humanity left, even though you're watching someone wither before your very eyes, might get, well, because of what's rolling through this and the pain at war, got to be some kind of cancer that's going on. And that's a hard thing to actually offer up a piece to, but I'm guessing this is more of a, as a something as an honoring note to this person, Victoria, as pen for. Well done, Pete. Pam, are you back? Or am I still alone here?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
I don't know. I couldn't even. It was like her recording was playing, but I couldn't hear it. So
you went green again?
Go green. No, I would know if I accidentally put myself in the green room. It was, well, good. I'm glad you can hear me now. Oh my gosh. These are the kind of poems I have such trouble commenting on, because it is beautifully written in its phrasing, and it's raw honesty to describe the ugliness of watching a friend die, I want to compliment this poem, at the same time, I feel like sometimes all I can do is offer these condolences, but even those sometimes feel cliche. I liked this all the way through. It was a beautiful emotive read, which I wish I could have heard all of it. I don't know why, what happened with my phone, but I'll have to go back and listen later. You could hear the emotion in her voice. And immediately it starts out strong with, I have watched you wither, attempting to polish the shine back into your appearance, massage the bloat from your belly, but dropsy is a bitch. Watching a friend die is a bitch. Cancer is a bitch. I do not want to sit helpless at your podcast and flick food upon the surface, destroying your image to my ever-watchful eye. I like this all the way through, but that stanza speaks to me because, some people are doers. Some people are helpers. They want to reach out and help everyone they can. But sometimes there just comes a point when you're watching a friend die and that there is nothing more you can do except for just sit there and be there for them. And that part of you that wants to do more struggles. So I thought this was just a beautiful, emotive write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
All That Glitters by Garden Delight.
Is that one for me? Or is it for you?
I can do it, I guess. Your caramel eyes share a glitter off-theme in the night sky. Stars flickering, ablaze like sun. Your glance, a fiery mirroring. Love is fuel for your fire. Adoration becomes kindling. Vastly esteemed over gold, you glimmer as my finely cut ruby. A spray of Vanda orchid generously abloom. Sunshine pouring through your dogwood trees. Shifting sprite light amid breezy leaves. Your radiance bears me above from every day. My affection liberates you in your glassy confines. We rise into the beyond, swimming in a celestial river of soaring hopes and dreams, well on our way to where whispers lodge our names in whited sailing ships. preparing the journey among shimmering constellations.
April.
Great read there, Rex. I really enjoy Garden Delight's poetry. Really nice flow that makes her visual, it visually appealing. I really like that she looked at this bowl, this picture, this surreal picture of a fishbowl filled with clouds and the fish swimming around it, and saw a representation of love and the kind of love that, you know, lifts you up. I really like this all the way through, but especially your radiance bears me above the everyday. My affection liberates you from your glassy confines. Together we rise into the beyond, swimming in a celestial view. I like how this becomes spiritual. It becomes about that idea of spiritually supporting each other up into another realm, into that, I like how she says, larger names and white sailing ships preparing to journey among shimmering constellations. I think this is just an absolutely beautiful write, and the whole idea that we don't have to stay in that bowl. We don't have to stay where people tell us to. We can look beyond. We can take those journeys to those constellations and learn and grow. Just an excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I mean, it's the fantasy that walks out of it the most. Celestial river, the whited sailing ships, the journey shimming through constellations, and that one stanza, your radiance bears me above the everyday. My affection liberates you from the glass, from your glassy confines. There's a kind of note to each bearing something that the other needs that allows them to traverse this fantasy world that she's offered up in so few words.
Absolutely, yeah. I like that. Great observation there. And what do you got for us next?
Through a Glass Darkly by Weaver of Dreams. And there's a cloud for that, too.
All right. Let's see. I have here somewhere. Here we go.
My life might seem torpid and tedious, but you cannot see what's within. My thoughts are golden gateway to freedom. I pass through with a flick of a fin. I can travel through time and dimensions, become that person I know is inside. Love and be loved with a passion. Reveal aspirations that won't be denied. It's true I have to return to the mundane, as hour by hour time slips slowly away. Unable to move from this hospital bed, I'm the star of my very own screenplay. Keep on talking to me, I will respond. Give you a sign, though progress is slow. Don't give up, look into my eyes, my love. Watch me blink once for yes, twice for no.
Oh, that was a wonderful read and just a beautiful and intriguing write. And it's kind of, it's a darkness and wow, just has a really strong impact. The artworks that Bobby chose for this contest really inspired some amazing writes. And of course, thank you to Weaver of Dreams for the recording. It's very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, it kind of walks the same way as Victoria's, but there's a bit of hope in this, even though this kind of hits on the notation of someone who's in a coma, where the thought of being trapped inside and offering up something as to what might or might not be happening within that realm. I'm the star of my very own screenplay. So the thought is that there's something going on, even though there's no response, or at least at the back end, keep on talking to me, I will respond, give you a sign that progress is slow. So maybe it's memory loss, maybe it's the coma itself, and it is that notation of not giving in the moment. There is hope to be made because of what's being offered, even though they can't be uttered in the moment.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. It was similar to Victoria's in that it spoke on death and helplessness. But, yeah, Victoria's was from the point of view of someone watching a friend die. And here we have a first-person narrative of someone who I get the impression of them being in a coma, you know, like with especially that third stanza. But it could also be the idea of someone who can't move because of physical ailments and plus, you know, not being able, like the Alzheimer's. But I like this all the way through, but I really like unable to move from this hospital bed. I'm the star of my very own screenplay. And right there just gives us that image, that idea of someone who can do nothing but just keep letting their life flash before their eyes. And I thought this had a strong emotional impact, especially with that idea of don't give up, look into my eyes, my love, watch me blink once for yes, twice for no. And to me, that just, you know, it hits really hard with the idea of someone trying to communicate, you know, trying to get their thoughts out. It's a beautiful write and thoughtful and very well done. And what do we got next?
Bottle of Sky by Seeker 2022. And it's either your read or there's a SoundCloud. I'm not sure which.
It is
your read.
My read. Yeah, I believe we only have one SoundCloud left, and that would be by Poet. So, all right. This is Bottle of Sky by Seeker 2022, and it goes like this. I pin my wash in silvered light to soft chorale of laughing leaves, the twittering of sparrows back, this golden hour I receive. A palmful of sun to stroke my face, an open bottle to hold the sky, a blazed footpath to find the way, to awake and quicken, not ossify. Though golden light can't fill my pockets and clouds won't dust away, the squalls that slap at tender skin, leaves feelings brushed with tints of gray. When gold is lost and shadows nigh, I carry close that bottle of sky. And that is a wonderful rhyme and flow. I believe this is a sonnet, or at least very similar to sonnet form. I really liked the idea of the idea of enjoying the simple moments, the simple things, like the palm full of sun to stroke the face. And even, you know, I pin my wash in silvered light. I like that because there's something so comforting about the smell of laundry hung out in the sun to dry. I like the idea of the open bottle to hold the sky. You know, that makes me think about how, you know, the glass of the bottle reflects the sky itself. And sometimes the idea is that it goes back to that poem where it's like the little memories that reflect the big feelings, you know. A blaze footpath to find the way to awaken and quicken, not ossify. And, you know, to me, I feel like there's two messages in this poem. And one is, you know, take time to enjoy life, you know, every part of life, even this, what seems like this overly simple thing. But also, you know, take time to get out there, to move, you know, don't, you know, if you feel an urge, you know, to go forth and blaze a new trail for yourself, then do that. Go on those adventures. You know, I just thought this was absolutely wonderful and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, it is a nice outdoor scene. I pinned my wash in silver light, the soft corral of laughing leaves, the twitting of sparrows back, golden hour I received. Nice touch to the moment itself. I thought the open bottle to hold the sky is literally her, the one talking, the one receiving. You open yourself up as the bottle to the sky, and everything else can work its way in. And she hit on that note of to awaken and quicken, not ossify. I thought that was nice. Ossify. It hits on the notion of being drunk, literally and figuratively, without the booze to offer up that drunkenness. It's the idea of being not just drunk in the moment, but drunken in the savoring of that which is that glorious day, little breeze of wind, the sunshine on your face. And it you don't have to have pockets full of gold to enjoy life on that level, even though the dust does offer its notations to things that come along, and they do slap at the skin, so to speak. But you know what? As long as you carry close that bottle of sky, even on the rainiest days, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, I like that. I like the whole observation of her being the bottle. And, you know, that and you're right. I mean, there's just so much to enjoy in life. And, you know, and you don't have to have all the gold or riches. You know, I just, wonderful comment there, Rex. All right, and what do we got next?
Well, we've got My Pet Human by the poet.
All right, very cool. Here we go.
My Pet Human. I'm just an average goldfish. I have a job like everyone else. I wind down watching my favorite pet human. I watch him walking around his tank. I watch him talking to my other pet humans in the tank. I wonder what he's saying to them. I find it quite relaxing after a busy day at work.
Great read there, poet. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. Now, that was a clever little brevity. I enjoyed that. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it's just a double angle. The thought was even psychiatrists set on the notion of watching a fish swim in a tank to relax oneself at the end of a really hectic day. The little thought of just the concentration itself brings down the adjustment to temperament and blood pressure to a point where, hey, you can actually relax and enjoy the day, the rest of the day, as opposed to being generously dipped into and keep on thinking about it. But I like this thought running with the opposite angle of the people being in the tank and the fish rolling around, actually offering them thoughts to what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. It is, you know, as you mentioned, they've shown that people relax more when they, you know, are watching a fish in a tank. Or oftentimes they find that having any pet that, you know, can, you know, you can pet and they'll be next to you and you can concentrate on really helps with anxiety and depression. I did like how this was twisted around to be the fish looking at the human. So, you know, very, very clever there and well done. And What do you got for us next, Rex?
Aunt Catherine's Greatest Gold by Big E. Our favorite aunt had planned her life when she was 21. She had a taste for clothes, fine wines, and basking in the sun. Long, graceful hair and slim physique, athletic legs so long. With all these ample assets, what could possibly go wrong? Enchanted by her favors, enter Uncle George, a millionaire in property with developments to forge. Besotted by dear auntie's looks and wonders they may bring, George devoted love and wealth, bequeathing everything. Their marriage lasted 20 months until the fateful dawn. Uncle George collapsed and died, and Catherine was forlorn. The coroner was efficient and pulled out all the stops, reporting that our Uncle George had choked on Cocoa Pops. After 6 long weeks of mourning, Aunt Kath met Uncle Harry, a merchant banking billionaire that she was soon to marry. Harry gave his lovely wife all of his attention, along with several merchant banks, too valuable to mention. A year of happy marriage, their relationship was stable, but Kath came down to breakfast to find him dead upon the table. The paramedics tried to help, but sadly couldn't fix. Was Harry's lungs ingested 6 weedy dicks. Almost inconsolable, Kath's next 10 days were long, and so to brighten up her life, went shopping in Hong Kong, and there by chance at cocktail time, while sipping on her gin, was swept right off her pretty feet by Sun Zhao Nantin. Now, Mr. Sun owned 40 ships trading out of China and took her on a honeymoon aboard his ocean liner. Her happiness was thus returned, and life again was grand. Just on 2 months later, they had returned to land. It wasn't long, and Sun Nantin and Catherine disagreed, for she was quite a feisty lass, and he a different breed. She begged him to adopt her ways. Alas, he paid the price. Her favorite servant found his corpse. He choked on sticky rice. Alone again, so sad was Kate, and thus she headed home. Her spirit had been broken. She'd lost the will to roam. At the international airport, she met Detective Matt McGiller. You're under arrest and can't confess. You're a terrible...
There, Rex. I thought this one was fun. You could tell pretty much almost right away where it was going to go, but it was worth going there. I just enjoyed how the dark, twisted humor within it. I also liked the fact that he told the story in rhyme, but this, like, he didn't, like, this, the rhyme didn't interrupt the story. It didn't make it, like sometimes when you try to force rhyme, you lose parts of the story. And here I thought he did a wonderful job with that. A great tale of a gold digger woman. I'm assuming, like, obviously a made up tale due to the fact that he threw in the serial killer, eating the cereal box cereal references. But in reality, I mean, this is the reality of some people. I mean, you can watch documentaries on women killers, and oftentimes they kill and go from husband to husband to family because it's the need for money, for riches, for all that. And I do think there was some serious message within the humor of this, which, I have to admit, did crack me up, especially that ending, nice punchline ending, and, the mention of the Cocoa Pops and the Weedy Bix, all very clever. But like it says, our favorite aunt had planned her life when she was 21. And to me, that was a great opening, first of all, because we learned that this woman decided from a young age what her life was going to be like. And it's not a favorite aunt. And then it goes on to be like, she goes on to be a serial killer. It just shows that you just never know who somebody is. I also found it interesting that we're like the stanza where she goes into the marriage with the man from China, and they have trouble getting along because they're from such different cultures. And it's definitely, and not that it's impossible, it can be difficult to make a marriage work from, or a relationship work from, when you're from different cultures. Just a really a great write, I like the humor in it, and very well done. And Rex, you read that very well. Your thoughts?
Well, with each enduring new hubby, they were their lifespan shortened. 20 months for the first one, 12 months for the next one, and only just a little over 2 months later for the last one. So I like the fact that she went on the bees of thought was cocoa bucks and Weetabix, both British cereal. We've got the same thing with Wheaties and Cocoa Puffs. I like the fact that she had dropped in the thought with he choked on sticky rice. The Chinese soup. Yeah. Nice bit of running with the normal stuff that you've actually got running around the house instead of going off grand. But also the detective, Matt McGilla. Oh, he was a gorilla. A McGilla gorilla. Yes. Literally cereal with a C. So, yeah. Puns. Walks in two languages and across many continents.
I like that, yeah. And I like that you brought up the fact that the time throughout the marriages got shorter and shorter. It's definitely like she just lost her patience more quickly.
Well, no, that's some serial killers, and they go on a spiral, a downward spiral. Things start picking up, and then they get caught.
That is true. You're right. A lot of serial killers, there it becomes that shortening of time between killing, because they have that need to be, that needs to be filled at a quicker pace. Yes, absolutely. And what do you got for us next?
Oh, that would be Panoramic Vortex by Blossom Writer.
Right. The Panoramic Vortex by Blossom Writer. And it goes like this. There is nothing more at the center of the universe but fool's gold creating the dead stars, vast as the scope of an astronomer's lens to the linear scale where light bends to a black hole, dust of incarnation. Nations whirl to the nebulous creations where life begins, so death ends. The earth is flat or hollow. Our imaginariums project the silent film of our virtual thoughts. As we devote time to the presidents of our being, end poem. Well, that one just had stunning use of language. And your thoughts on this poem, Rex?
It's on that note of perception. There is nothing more at the center of the universe but fool's gold. But fool's gold creating the dead stars. Okay, there's a nice touch of looking at a singularity. Vast is the scope of an astronomer's lens. The linear scale where light bends to a black hole. And then a sort of dust of incarnations whirl to nebulous creations where life begins, so death ends. It's on notations of if you don't look beyond the ease of that which you're told or learned, then you don't learn anything in the interim because you're looking for a singular lens which doesn't offer any thought or hope to what the world is except to that which you perceive it as opposed to actually really looking at it.
I like that. I like that thought that you brought up, the idea of deception and how you perceive something, and the idea that you really need to look, open your eyes and look for yourself. I really thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors all the way through, but I did like fool's gold, creating the dead stars, vast as the scope of an astronomer's lens, the linear scale where light bends to a black hole. And I feel like the bending of light really, that idea of how you perceive something, you know, especially because, you know, like if you look at one side of a spoon and you look upside down and the other side, you're right side up. I feel like there's within those lines the idea of looking at the spoon where you're upside down and thinking that's the way things are. I also really like that ending and the idea that, you know, too often we're caught up in our imagination, you know, rather than opening our eyes. Just a beautiful and thoughtful rite all the way through. I also of incantations whirl, you know, and dust makes me think of death, of dying. And so, you know, to me there's kind of this idea of the dying of magic, the dying of creation. A beautiful rite and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rick?
All that's gold is not gold by a little twinkle. The seashore has waves. Some are calm and rolling, some are not. Some people wander and don't find their place. They are like rolling stones. The stones go hither and fall on the rocks and aren't nurtured. Some stones are broken and need nurturing. Tame the storms of youth. Many people cry out for support. And because there are waiting lists, the clients don't get what they truly need. When will the lines of communications open up? Answer the calls of many people suffering from mental illness. Don't leave them hanging on the telephone. Life is not like Blondie's rock music. It's reality and thought.
Great read, Rex. I really liked how this is, it points out there are people in need, people that, you know, reaching out for help, and perhaps there's something that, you know, we can do. It's intriguing to me that she starts out with such a nature imagery that almost seems calm, you know. Like the seashore has waves, some are calm and rolling, some are not. I guess as I look at this, that works well as a metaphor for the idea of, you know, how the storm of life hits people differently. And the stones go hither and fall on the rocks and aren't nourished. Some stones are broken and need nurturing. That really, I like that because it reminds me of, and I forget, what is it when Jesus tells a story in the Bible. I can't remember the exact word for it. But the story he tells of the seeds cast, and so some are cast in shallow ground and don't, you know, grow right, and some are cast in deep soil, you know, and you know, so that's what that reminds me of. And I like that this is communicating the idea of you need to hear these people who are suffering. You need to respond to these people who are suffering because this is reality. Great write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
First one, a broken system. Kind of hits on that note of the government running a system where there are always long lines, nobody to help, and if you do get help, it's like 6 months down the road or maybe a year down the road. So the idea of commingling a system into the fact where the government holds all the, we know what you need, we know what you want, yet the production is never there because they are unprepared to fully extend themselves within that system because it doesn't work. I mean, it's all right to have some of this set up as a backlash for those who do fall into the cracks. That's what the thought with the rolling stones. The stones go hither and fall on the rocks and aren't nurtured. Those are the ones that fall between the cracks. Having programs for that is one thing, but running everybody through the same system, the same payer class and all that, it doesn't work because some of these people can't wait until you decide it's their time, their number, to be taken care of when it's probably all too late at that point in time. That's the back end of this. Don't leave them hanging on the telephone line. Life is not like Blondie's rock music. It's reality. Unfortunately, most of the people that roll on these phone lines don't really care for their jobs. It's not something they want to sit and listen to other people telling them problems and why can't they get in to see a doctor, what's taking so long, and all the other crap that goes along with it. They're hurting and they're sick. They want to see somebody now, not in a week, not in a month, not in a year.
That is so true, sad but true. I was reading the other day, or somebody was telling me that there are people who retire, and the money they save up after they retire oftentimes goes towards medical expenses. And, you know, it is just very sad that there are people who need help, and there are people, the government, you know, just sitting there, not doing nothing, having people wait. It's a sad reality of life, and hopefully, you know, someday something can be done about it. And yeah, so what do we got next, Rex?
Actually, that was the last one.
That was the last one. All right. Well,
yep.
Here. Then, why don't we just go ahead and promote some upcoming shows and contests and, you know, then, yeah, wrap it up. Sounds good to me. And, well, first of all, join us 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time tonight for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. And then 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, Faviana and Babbler have Part Sinner, Part Saint. Gray Eyes Smith at 10 p.m. on Saturday has Bad Company. And, of course, Rex, you have your show, Rhythm and Rhyme, on Sunday at 10 p.m. And what do you got going on for that?
Ian McDonald, co-founder to King Crimson in 1968 and Foreigner in 1976. The music between the
really...
two with a little one, another option in there from because he was he was also a studio musician, so he got to sit on a number of things, including one from T-Rex back in the day.
Oh, cool. I am really looking forward to that show. You know, I've listened to music from both those bands, and just that guy Ian McDonald, extremely talented. As you mentioned in your contest, he had multiple instruments that he played.
Yes, he did.
So
they even
put him
in twice on the 21st Century Schizoid Man, just for that saxophone, the dual echo of it.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Let's see. I know After Midnight, we don't have a contest running for this week because we have carryovers that we're going to be delving into. So, of course, you know, it's 12:30 Eastern U.S. time on Tuesday, and readers and commenters are always welcomed. You know, and if you want to call in with a poem of your own, that's great too. And then for the Art of Seduction and Tuesday, Twisted Tuesday, Naomi Sarah has contests for both of those. So I think the one for Tuesday is closed, but you're still welcome to write for the topic, which is she provided us with some really just wonderful, colorful artwork. Let's see. And you have another contest running for, I believe, the 15th. And you want to tell us about that?
That would be Open Up Your Doors to Perception. Some lines from Morrison that I don't think many people have seen a lot of before. I picked a bunch out and threw them on a page and see what comes.
Absolutely. And I do encourage people to write for Rex's contest. I also encourage you to check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And I will tell you, you know, even though it's about 2-3 weeks away, I'm already looking forward to that Jim Morrison show, because always inspires just amazing poetry. And as far as contests that I have going, I have After Midnight, Midnight, which has a variety of quotes that have the word midnight in them. I have Twisted Tuesdays, Seven Women of Art, where I provide seven different women artists, because it's National Women's Day on March 8th, or you can choose your own favorite woman artist and one of their paintings or one of their quotes and write what that inspires. I also have Into the Darkness, Splatterpunk, which is going to be just a fun and gory night of poetry. Looking forward to that. And the Art of Seduction, Tarot. I always pronounce that word wrong. It just sounds weird when I say it. But the inspiration comes from tarot cards, either the artwork on the card itself or the meaning given behind the card, or even just the title of the card itself. I think that's going to be another great night of poetry. And like I said, so much to look forward to. Another one that's going to be a great show that I'm looking forward to is Richard Wiseman is running a contest with quotes from Von Goethe. Is that how you pronounce it? The guy who wrote Slaughterhouse-Five, Kurt Vonnegut.
Vonnegut.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's going to be another great show. But like I said, all our hosts and hostesses should be checked out. All right, well, I have enjoyed tonight. Great comments and conversation, amazing poetry. Thank you, Rex, for everything you do. Thank you for being a great co-host. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Thank you to Fill My Eyes, Jean, for everything she does in the background. And thank you to all our hosts and hostesses for all that they do. Was there anything that you wanted to add, Rex?
Nope. That's everything.
All right. Well, you have a good night.
All right. Good night.